From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of May 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. A bit later in the program, Bruce Bostert will be here from the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, and we'll look at the agricultural weather forecast today with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey. Along the way, we'll hear this week's edition of In My Backyard from Lisa Braltz, and we'll hear the latest on the Top Farmer Crop Workshop agenda. It all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. The nearby contracts in the May soft red winter wheat finished down 2 cents at $5.92¾, and the July futures down 4¼ at $5.97 for the day. The hard red contract in Chicago at $6.10, down 7½ cents for the afternoon. May corn futures at 17½ cents lower at $6.08. July at $5.81, down 6½, and September 2¼ lower at $5.11¼. December futures at $5.05¼, down 2 cents on the afternoon. And the March futures at $5.17 were down 2. May contract $5.25½, down 3¼. Let's take a look at the soybeans now. May futures at $14.04, down 48¼. July futures $14.06, down 49¼. And the August at $13.93½, down 48¼. September futures $13.50¾, down 36¼. And November beans were down 37¾ at $13.21¼. January futures $13.20¾, down 34 for the afternoon. Bean meal at $411, down $12.90. And bean oil at $51.90, down $1.25 for the day. August live cattle at $117.70, 90 cents lower. October at $122.60, 77½ cents lower for the day. August futures at $157.47½, $1.42½ lower on the afternoon. And September futures at $158.62½, down $1.35. June lean hogs at $83.30, up 80 cents. Back in two. Now, here are what the numbers look like from the outside markets for the afternoon. In June, crude oil futures at $95.81 a barrel, and they finished the day down $1.26. Ethanol at $2.10¾, a penny and a tenth lower. Natural gas at $2.49¼, that's a penny and three-tenths higher. And the heating oil for the day, or diesel fuel, at $2.95¼, down 2¼ on the afternoon. Gold futures in the May contract at $1,583.60 an ounce, down $11.50 for the day. And the U.S. dollar at 80.27, that's up 0.16. The CRB index at 291.80, down 2.79. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 77 degrees with a south wind at 11 to 13 miles an hour tonight. Partly cloudy in the area, with a low of 54 with a southwest wind at 5 to 8. And Saturday, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Should be partly sunny on Saturday, a high of 79 degrees. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 53. Winds will shift to the northeast with a 6 to 10 mile an hour run. And Sunday, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny, a high near 74 with a northeast wind at 7 to 9. Sunday night, mostly cloudy and 53 degrees. Monday, sunny and 73. Monday night, cloudy and 54. Tuesday next week, sunny skies and 77. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 56. Wednesday, mostly sunny and 77 degrees. Wednesday night, partly cloudy and 56 again. And on Thursday of next week, mostly sunny skies, a high near 78. A more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. We'll talk to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line today from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, Mike Zuzulo. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me about the marketplace and what happened in Chicago.
Biggest one-day drop in July beans since September 30th of last year, and we racked up a 52-cent lower day that day based upon the composite chart that I looked at on lead month futures. And a lot of that started out with the outside markets and the overnight trade, the big loss by J.P. Morgan getting some people nervous again and taking that risk-off type mindset. The other domino that probably fell during midday was a cash source in Chicago confirmed to me that there were some May corn and bean longs trapped, and it looked like that on the screen because you had the bids and offers so wide in the May corn and in the May beans after lunchtime, and we got those two contracts getting ready to go off the board early next week, and it just looked as though they were getting kind of washed away from very thin trading and longs trying to get out. Well, that was kind of a domino that it then turned into probably more fundamental negativity from the outside markets with China and the European Union. Dave and I talked about today. We don't have to go through that again. But I think mostly macro negative sentiment, no follow-through bullishness from the report in beans yesterday. The CONAB number being bigger for Brazilian bean production, that was brought up again today. These things, I think, all led to, quite frankly, just a stimulation of technical support levels being hit and the record long managed money speculators coming in and reducing their soy positions in a big, big way.
Can you talk to me just a bit more about the J.P. Morgan position? Because I don't know whether this is true or not, but is it important that this is after the fact that they posted the $2 billion loss at this point and they were able to, I suppose, weather their way through that process, and now they're just making it known. So it's not something that is happening in the marketplace. Are they out of those positions?
No, that's the key. They have not gotten out. They still have to get out. And so they have a great big fat bullseye on them right now, and that's what's been talked about on some of the financial news networks today. And this is where it goes back to any time you hear mark-to-market losses, you think margin calls, and then that resonates back in the financial sector. Anybody that deals with margin calls and mark-to-market, they realize that you may have to dump out of profitable assets to cover those losses. We don't know if they are in the commodities at this point because of the new Dodd-Frank rules and the idea of no proprietary trading by the banks. But I think it causes fear that the credit markets will get squeezed again. And Moody's and Standard & Poor's were already looking at downgrading some of the banks, some of them three notches, and Citigroup and I think J.P. Morgan were two of them that they were looking at. And these are banks that are in the commodity markets and selling those ETFs and managing money in the commodities for clients or through hedge funds for clients. So that's probably the biggest issue on the table is they haven't gotten out, and so we don't know how much more damage it could do to them and then whether that breeds into the idea of credit markets getting tighter.
So regardless of wire service reports that might have suggested that J.P. Morgan could have been rolling out of positions in beans, it could simply have been fear.
Exactly. That's exactly what it could have been, and I think that's where it goes back to the record long is not the index guy. The record long is the managed money guy, and the managed money guy is usually high frequency nowadays. He's usually the spreader nowadays, and he's usually the guy that is going to obey the chart technicals. And what I saw on the Dow Jones UBS grain chart this week was a break. We had a higher high. We had a higher close last week. We had a lower close going into this week, and we are also breaking through a trend line after testing the 50-week moving average to the upside. So there's a lot of technical indicators suggesting that chart may be getting to roll over. And I think, quite frankly, after sitting down with some of the managed funds, managed futures people, it straights this past, or a week ago, I guess it was, I think it does boil down to the technicals at this point, given that they've been building record longs, yes, on South American supply shortfalls, but also on the fact that the technicals fed the bull as well.
Now let's turn your attention to corn. I'm not so certain that we can't simply disregard May at this point,
right,
and talk about July, because now we have a $5.81 mark in July, and that's much lower than where we have been, even if we're trading above that, and we are in the cash markets.
No, you're exactly right, and that's where the cash market and the May futures still have bearing, especially as the May goes off the board, because that's where you have to assume that the July is going to work towards trying to go to where the May goes off the board. And so if the May stays at 608, then we still have 30 cents or a little over 20 cents to get up to where the May goes off the board. So I think the idea in the Chicago Board of Trade mindset, certainly my mindset, is that the cash market's tight enough. Our weekly stocks on Tuesday that USDA pushes out show that we're 23% below last year at this time. And so if we have tighter stocks at the elevators and the river terminals, and Decatur's still pushing bids in the interior, and the Gulf is still trying to fight for that corn coming to get it down the river, as the May goes off the board, you'd think that July would still have some life to it. And that's where the July D's corn spread becomes extremely important next week. I think also, Todd, after we get past the bearish plantings report that we'll probably see on Monday, I think if the dry weather maintains, the models maintain a dry weather forecast for 10 days out, I think that will start to get some traction as well. That should reignite the corn spread, I would think.
Anything else we want to make sure we cover for the day?
Big thing on the outside markets is the S&P 500 is right near its 100-day moving average, just around the 1344 level. We have not been below that since the beginning of 2012. If we'd go below that, we'd match up with the crude oil and the gold and the copper and the hogs, you know, all these markets that have made new 2012 lows, and the corn as well for the December futures. So I think that's where the S&P 500 could be, once again, the most bearish feature to our trade next week.
Mike, you have a great weekend.
You too, Todd. Thank you.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. You can hear him again in a couple of ways. You can always visit our website at willag.org. You can use your smartphone and visit our smartphone website, which is no WW in front of it, just m.willag.org. Or you can dial this number on any phone, 217-333-3434. We'll update them all by about 3:15 this afternoon.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgro on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. Don't forget about Commodity Week, posted to our website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening. Jerry Bange of the World Agricultural Outlook Board, they brought you the WASDE numbers yesterday morning, will be our guest in studio. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson and Brian Stark of the Andersons. On the other phone line will be Dan Zwicker with CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. CGB, by the way, is the owner of the newest export facility in the Gulf at New Orleans. And we're hoping that we might talk with Dan just a little bit during Commodity Week about a bus tour we're hoping to organize this summer yet, the 20th to the 24th of August. I know it's late, but we're going to see how many of you really want to go down and see that export facility, potentially visit one of the brand new facilities that produces fertilizer there in Convent, Louisiana as well. It's a five-day trip, two nights in the French Quarter, one in Tunica, Mississippi, and we'll visit John Bondurant and Dan Zwicker both on that trip. We'll talk more about that during Commodity Week. Find it on our website at willag.org. Now up next, something else you might consider doing this summer, the Top Farmer Crop Workshop. The agenda has been finalized. This year's Top Farmer Crop Workshop agenda is squarely aimed at producers looking to grow their farms and farm profitability. University of Illinois' Scott Irwin has been helping with Purdue University's Top Farm program since he was a graduate student about three decades ago. He knows the program and its value and says it will be worthwhile to producers actively looking to grow their operations financially, in size, or both.
Mike Bulgey and Brent Gloy are going to lead off the conference with something called a presentation called Positioning Your Farm for Growth. And then we have Bob Milligan from Cornell, who's going to give a presentation on exploring leadership and human dimensions of preparing your farm for the future. He's a really dynamic, exciting speaker in this area, talking about leadership and HR management on farm operations, which when you talk to farmers, that's increasingly an important issue.
The speakers at the workshop will take up other important farm issues too, like how to transition from one management team to another, father to son, for instance, explore the latest equipment trends and on which technologies equipment manufacturers are placing their bets, discuss the market fundamentals of fertilizer, learn to use spreadsheets more effectively and how to collect on-farm data, a little gossip and learning session on the price of farmland. Naturally, tax planning is an agenda must. At the three-day event, we'll wrap up with an address to be made by Donald Orr. He's the president of JBS United. And while JBS is a local company based in Sheraton, Indiana, it is an industry leader in swine nutrition and research. And more importantly for this conference, does an enormous amount of business in China. Mr. Orr will offer insight into the global marketplace. Well, the Top Farmer Crop Workshop, a joint production of the University of Illinois and Purdue, is set for July 9, 10, and 11. You can learn more and register online. Search Google for the phrase 45th Top Farmer Crop Workshop. Up next, Lisa Braltz is here with her latest edition of In My Backyard. Today, she talks about the weather.
If anyone's ever wondered why I talk so much about the weather on In My Backyard, I confess. Running a large outdoor Saturday morning farmer's market in Urbana is my day job. For 7 months out of the year, the weather and what it's going to do and when it's going to do it are a preoccupation. I even worry about the weather the rest of the year. Recently, I found myself thinking about the weather even more in terms of how it relates to growing food, since the winter was so mild and everything was growing so fast and early. Because fretting about the weather isn't enough, I started pondering another factor that can influence what's available to eat locally during our growing season: bugs.
First thing that's going to happen, it's everything will be a little earlier than it usually is. Doesn't necessarily mean more abundant, but earlier.
That's Dr. Rick Weinzierl, professor in the Department of Crop Sciences at the University of Illinois, as well as a U of I extension specialist. His area of expertise is insects, specifically those that cause problems for specialty crop growers, farmers who grow fruits and vegetables. He and his team set traps for insects in their research orchard just south of Urbana to learn more about what's here and when it's here. But they also pay attention to the weather. They operate their own weather station at the orchard and use data from the Illinois Water Survey and other agencies. They do this for a lot of reasons, but one is because insects, when they migrate, often migrate in on weather systems.
They move in on weather systems, and that seems a little funny to people to say we've just received insects from Louisiana or Texas or the Gulf Coast, anywhere in the Gulf Coast. It's not like they use their own muscles to fly 500 miles or 1,000 miles. They simply rise up into weather systems and they move with the weather fronts and they drop out when the front hits a boundary. In the same place, same way as we get thunderstorms, we have insects drop out of those weather systems.
I had no idea. I wondered, is it possible in some way to predict the arrival of certain types of insects? It actually is. One migrant species we've all seen at farmers markets or in the garden is the corn earworm, the worm you sometimes see in the tip of an ear of sweet corn after you start shucking. That bug doesn't survive the winter here very well, but it comes to us instead on weather systems from Texas and Louisiana. When it arrives makes all the difference to a sweet corn farmer. If it arrives in June, that farmer will have to intervene to keep the numbers down. If it arrives in August, it's not likely you'll find worms in your locally grown sweet corn. So it's definitely in farmers' interest to see which way the corn earworms are blowing, so to speak. Meteorologists and entomologists are helping them figure it out.
They make predictions that, you know, the likelihood of corn earworm emergence is low, and it will be low 80% of the time, but 20% of the time it will be, if populations are moving, then the likelihood of something happening is pretty high. And out of those, maybe only a quarter of those predictions will be right. But they do tell people be attentive, and if you're attentive and nothing happens, it's probably no different than a tornado warning. We'd rather have a few false positives than negatives.
Professor Weinzierl told me that the insects that cause the biggest problems for our local farmers like hot, dry weather. So he thinks it's possible, but not probable, that insects could be more than a nuisance for the area's small farmers. Chances are pretty good that your favorites at local markets will not be obviously affected by insects. See other strange insect plagues, like the dark-wing fungus gnat infestation earlier this spring, or the infamous soybean aphid swarm of late summer 2008, that might become a bother if the weather conditions are just right at the right time in the insect's development. He did assure me, however, that it won't be a massive cloud of grasshoppers like the ones Laura Ingalls Wilder described in her book On the Banks of Plum Creek. Rocky Mountain locusts died out for reasons no one knows exactly in the early 1900s. One less insect to fret about.
Our thanks to Lisa Braltz and to Dave Dickey for help in producing In My Backyard. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op, located in Lincoln Square Mall in downtown Urbana. Common Ground is holding their first ever hiring fair on June 8th from 3 to 8 p.m. in the Lincoln Square Conference Center. More information about the hiring fair is available on their website, commonground.coop.
Let's check the Friday afternoon cash grain markets with Bruce Boster. Did the Ludlow Co-op elevators in Ludlow, Illinois this afternoon. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Great. Beautiful day out
it
there.
It is a beautiful day. Farmers are planting, I suppose, mostly beans at this time, but I suppose maybe a few folks out putting some corn in the ground yet, too.
Planting beans. I mean, we had a tremendous range in rain over the last week from a half inch to 4.5 inches. So we've got some people who are going back in and starting to get in. You get to the north end, it's still, the ponds are starting to go down.
When they started the morning out this morning, they were feeling pretty good about their beans, and then they were worth 50 cents a bushel less by the time the afternoon made it around today. Do you have some good ideas of what happened in the marketplace?
I am shocked on this. I mean, after having a day yesterday where we were down 20 cents on corn and up 25 on soybeans, and then to see it turn right around where we were seeing some relatively strengthened corn and beans just fell off the cliff. So, no, I don't have a good handle on this.
And what did your basis do in the afternoon?
Basis has been just dead steady. Old crop beans steady to down 2 cents over the week. New crop is steady. Corn, we've picked up 10 to 12 cents over the last week on the old crop, and new crop is steady. So the corn sure doesn't react like there's a bunch of extra bushels out there, like the USDA said.
that may be very well true. How far over are you at this point?
We are 32 over.
So
that's not indicative of being surplus corn right now.
But it is about the difference between the May and the July contracts, right?
Yep. And it's 32 over the July, so you're going up to May levels. May goes off the board at noon on Monday. You know, your old rule of thumb is seeing the July move up to it.
You think that'll happen, or will the May move down to the July?
Well, the May's going to run out of time. So if it's going to do anything, the July, you know, July would have to move up to it, and you never say have to, or the rule of thumb just gets thrown out the window, which is entirely possible in this environment, too.
In this environment, if it does get thrown out the window, do you think it just ignores the gap that will be left there?
Long term, no. I don't, and, you know, I see some of the processors putting coverage on, but there is just not willing sellers on the old crop. People have been good, disciplined sellers, and if you don't do that, you stand the potential of seeing some pretty wild basis numbers.
And finally today, your bids.
We are at 613 on nearby corn and 1393 on soybeans.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company. He's in Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. We'll post Commodity Week there by about 6 o'clock this evening. Jerry Bangy of the World Agricultural Outlook Board brought you the WASDE report yesterday, and those brand new ending stocks numbers were bigger than you thought for corn. We'll talk to him and ask him a couple of questions about why that happened during Commodity Week.
It's National Mocha Tort Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1838, Thomas Andrew Knight died. a British horticulturalist and botanist. He initiated the field of fruit breeding, and he studied the effects of pollen in the garden pea on seed characteristics. He also investigated controlled environmental culture, better known as greenhouses, as well as plant nutrition, fertilization, and pest control. In 1886, W. Marshall patented a grain binder. In 1934, a two-day Dust Bowl storm caused major ecological and agricultural damage to the American and Canadian prairies. The phenomenon was caused by severe drought, coupled with decades of extensive farming without crop rotation or other techniques to prevent erosion. In the 1930s, millions of acres of farmland became useless for planting. The Dust Bowl was centered on the panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma, as well as parts of New Mexico, Colorado, and Kansas. And in 1946, B.F. Goodrich announced the development of the tubeless tire. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line, Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey to take up the agricultural weather forecast. Jim, when you look at recent history, Illinois had actually been on the drought monitor, but we've had quite a bit of rainfall. Have things changed in the state?
Yes, they have. That's the best news this week is that we were on the list in across much of central and in northern Illinois, kind of between interstates about Interstate 72 and Interstate 80, we had across the board abnormally dry conditions, as they call them on the drought monitor. And with the recent rains that we've had through that area, we've gotten about 1 to 3 inches this week, and we had about 1 to 3 inches last week. That has really turned things around across that region. There's still a little bit of dryness kind of over by Peoria, Lincoln, and that area of the state. But for the most part, we've bounced back pretty nicely. The soil moisture looks good. The stream flows are back up and running. So everything looks pretty good. The only area I'm still worried about is far southern Illinois there. Those bottom tier of counties there are awfully dry for this time of year. So we'll be watching that as we move forward.
Do you know how the National Weather Service calculates whether we're in a dry or droughty time frame? Is it based on subsoil moisture or topsoil moisture, or a combination of such?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of a consensus-driven. What they do is they look at things like precipitation deficits, but then they also factor in soil moisture reports and stream flow levels and things like that. And they've got some metrics that they use to kind of determine, okay, how bad is it? But they really like to hear about the impacts because you can have these kind of things that are what I call paper droughts where they look bad on paper, but maybe the impacts aren't really showing up yet. So it's always nice to hear about the impacts.
Okay, so a lot of it then is driven by it's dry and we know it's dry.
That's right, exactly.
Well, glad to see it's science-based.
That's right, yes.
Speaking of science, take a look forward. Tell me what you see and what the National Weather Service is talking about for the next several days here in our part of the world.
That's right. You know, if we look at the forecast, it'll be great weather for field work. We've got the highs during the days will be in the mid to upper 70s across central Illinois, lows in about the mid 50s. There's a slight chance of rain on Saturday and again on Sunday, but the total amounts don't look that large, maybe a tenth of an inch or 2/10 of an inch. So just kind of scattered thunderstorms, kind of hit and miss there. But pretty much the rest of the week, it's going to be the same story, very sunny conditions, very warm temperatures. I think it'll be probably next weekend before we see our next significant chance of precipitation.
Jim, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey joins us here on the Closing Market Report to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Thanks for being with us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com. Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.